We seem to have a theme developing tonight. Tom mentioned sperm, and Carl mentioned a fetus, so we'll see. We'll see where this goes. Well, we have another special guest here. Before I forget, if you lost a glove, it's right here. Patty found that out in the parking lot, so check your pocket. We have another special guest here tonight, and this is Mother Holly.
The lost is found.
Oh, okay. Were you offering a reward by any chance for that? No. We have Mother Holly here tonight, and her story is from Grimm, Whenever It Snows, Frau Hilda is Making Her Bed. Ladies and gentlemen, Mother Holly.
I need light. Well, normally, you would not consider the story I'm going to tell you to be a Christmas story, but I want to tell you first about who Frau Hilda, or Mother Holly, is. Because she's old, let me tell you. Forget the sperm. She's before. She goes all the way back to Paleolithic times. She is the great mother goddess of Nordic and Teutonic and ultimately even Celtic lands. She is the goddess of death and rebirth. And so because of that, the time that she ruled was the winter time. And she also had her domain in caves under the ground. So she was not only a sky goddess of the winter skies, but also the goddess of the underworld, where the dead would go to rest. So her place was caves and tombs. But ultimately, when the spring came, she would bring life into those places, and so the tomb would become a womb. I have my notes, because this is just the preliminary. I want to give you a little more background on her. Oh, some of her other places that she was known to be found was in ponds and glens and fens and bogs. And they have stories about how newborn babies were pulled wet from her ponds and taken their first breath. And in order to enter her lands, besides walking the highway of the dead, which is the Milky Way, and in Germany named after her, the best way to enter into her underworld is to fall through water, as you'll hear in the story. Now, even though she was the goddess of death, she was not feared. Her name means the beneficent one, because she was the one who would guide you from your death into your next life. Now, some of the oldest things we know about Mother Holly was that she was a spinner. And so she would spin your fate, but also she was a weaver, so she could weave your next life as well. No, later on she became known as Woden's consort. And she and he would ride in the wild hunt. Now, if you know anything about stories about fairies across all of Europe, they have lots of stories about the wild hunt. But this wild hunt was one where Woden and Mother Holly would chase after Fenrir, the wolf, who stole the sun. And by golly, every year they would get that wolf and they would capture him and get him to put the sun back into the sky by January 1st. It was amazing. But they did it year after year. So spring would come. She was said to bring the snowflakes, because when she would fluff out her down pillows, the feathers would fly through the air and they would turn into snow that would cover the land. And so when that happened, people would say, oh, Mother Goose is feathering her nest, because one of her symbols and her sacred creatures was the goose. And she would sometimes pluck those gooses and magically the feathers would come back to fill those pillows and to fill her down comforters. She was also the collector of children, because those children that were born before they were baptized during the Christian era and way before that, because remember, we're talking Paleolithic goddess here, way before that, before their naming day, which was the ninth day that they were born, after they were born, if they didn't get those things to happen to them before then Mother Holly would gather those children and she would keep them around here, sort of like a pagan limbo, I think. And so these children's souls, they would accompany her. So you can see how over time, because she was pictured as riding a goose, that we now know one of her aspects is Mother Goose. who tells lullabies and, you know, those little lap rhymes for children. She is, let's see, what else do I want to tell you about her? She's the white lady. She often would be seen with her hair braided like this. Her hair was gray or silver. She'd wear lots of white, sometimes green and red too, because she was also represented by mistletoe and by holly. Sound familiar? And she would knit the blankets of snow that covered the ground. When it was raining, they would say, oh, Mother Holla is doing her wash. And when there'd be lightning, she was scotching or beating her flax. And the fog was from the smoke from her chimney. Oh, and also, she always was pictured with keys at her belt. I don't know if you remember in the Kalevala, but the lady of the house, the mistress of the house, would always have the keys that belonged to everything. And certainly, she ruled the world, and she was the goddess of death and rebirth. So by the time we get to the Middle Ages, well, the church was already saying, because she was connected to women, because she was the patron of childbirth, protector of women and children, and because she was connected to women's craft, so of course, what do you suppose that they connected her to? Mm-hmm. Witchcraft. The church, remember, we're talking about the church. And so they said that now those sweet children that used to accompany her now were the captured souls, and they were howling and they were tortured little children's souls. She made them go on the wild hunt with her, and now she was accompanied by witches, and they all flew on their brooms. But if you ask the German people about Mother Holla, they would tell you, yes, yes, when she and the witches fly around the field, then their bounties would double. And they could point to you the mountain in Germany that is her sacred mountain, where they would all gather to do exactly that. There are ponds there and caves there and all sorts of places named after Mother Holla. Let's see. Today, Yule, solstice, is her day, traditionally. Now, over time, it gradually got fudged over to Christmas, too. And it used to be that she was not so very long ago considered one of the major gift givers in Germany. She was then pictured as a witch who had a long red cape, and she rode on a broom, and she would come to everybody's house, and she would fill the children's shoes with coins and goodies. And they would also leave out bread and milk to encourage her to get better gifts. Some of her symbols are the apple, because when you chop the apple sideways, you see the five-pointed star, which was the symbol of the priestess and the goddess, and later considered the symbol of witches by the church. It was also, and I thought, is Barry? Barry, can you hear me? Also, her symbol was the elderberry tree. Yeah, and it was considered sacred, and people would leave offerings underneath the tree and in order to ask for healing. And many of the parts of the tree, except I think even the bark too, was used for medicine. So it was considered true folly, and it was against the law to cut down an elderberry tree. And they would plant them against the barns and at the entranceways to farms for protection. Another symbol of hers was the baking of bread, because since Neolithic times, that was considered a sacred act. And so on this day and on Christmas Day, across Scandinavia and in Germany and in places beyond, there would be great feasts held in her honor. Now, one of the things I found when I was researching about Mother Holla, or Frau Holla, was that one of the writers pointed out that the stories about the goddesses, even more so than the stories about the gods, were sublimated. And they were pushed down and over into things that were relegated to children, to nursery rhymes, to fables, to fairy tales. And whenever you come across in a fairy tale where they're talking about the fairy godmother, they said that's a signpost to remember that once it was the great goddess.